It's time to get nerdy, y'all.
A little bit of gaming history for you.
Something relevant in gaming and discuss our opinions on it.
Should we kick it out of here or should we kickstart it?
This is the part where you, the listeners, try to stump the hosts.
I'm not a lawyer. I just play one on a podcast. Welcome, everybody. It is Tuesday, October 27th. Which means it's time to get nerdy. Welcome to episode 163 of Two Nerds in a Pod, the nerdiest gaming podcast in the multiverse. Bonded by our love of video games, your two hosts are myself, Maxion, a tech enthusiast and occasional streamer, and my good friend, stand-up comedian Mr. Lom Galuka, also known as Mr. Nice Guy 425. Our one-hour mission, of course, to bring you news, history, issues, crowdfunding, trivia, and lawsuits that are important to video games. Our returning sponsor this week are the fellows over at Game Insider Magazine. Thank you kindly for sponsoring our show. How are you doing, man?
Dude, I'm doing fantastic, Mac. I had a really good weekend, man.
Yeah?
Yeah, I did. I did a show in Indiana, in Leesburg, Indiana. And shout out to the people of Leesburg if we have any new fans who are now listening to the pod because you enjoyed the show. And it was a really cool show. They're cool people. Here's the thing I'll say about Leesburg: y'all need to put the masks on. That's all I'll say. Y'all need to put the masks on. I get it. We all have our beliefs. We all have our views. Some of us like games. Some of us don't. But, you know, just wear a mask. It's not that hard to wear a mask. I had an interesting interaction with someone at the show, Mac. I'll just tell you this story real quick. I talk about nerdy stuff in my act. I talk about video games. I talk about movies. And I'm a strong believer that they don't cause violence in society. I believe that individuals make those decisions. There was one guy in the crowd who disagreed with me vocally during the show. He was respectful. And I just said, dude, you look like a gun owner. Because he looked like the type, you know. And I was like, do you own guns? And he was like, yeah, I own guns. And I was like, well, dude, do guns kill people or do people kill people? And he just had to think about it for a minute. So one for me, zero for Leesburg in that argument. But in all seriousness, the people of Leesburg were dope. I had a really good time. It was a great weekend, Mac.
Man.
How about you? How was your week, your past weekend? What'd you do?
Oh, man. So it snowed, got like 6 inches of snow. And this weekend, Mrs. the Mac and I actually didn't need to really be anywhere. So we had ourselves kind of a little forced staycation, right?
Awesome. Awesome.
Yeah. So we didn't go out. We had, you know, we knew it was coming. So we picked up provisions and stuff. And, you know, we just spent time together. It was a great energizing weekend. There are some of those weekends that you come off of and you're just like, ugh, now I'm dragging going into work. This was one that was much more, you know what? I'm ready.
Dude, you were hyped for Monday. That means you really had an energizing weekend. That's fantastic, man.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, Mac, on that note, I say we do what we do best, and we hop right into that gaming news, man. What do you think about that?
Let's do it, sir.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, this is episode number 161 of Two Nerds. Oh, wait, 163 of Two Nerds in a Pod, the nerdiest video game podcast in the galaxy. We're almost at Halloween. Mac, are you real quick before we get into the news, are you dressing up for Halloween? You got a costume? What are you doing? Professor X?
No, I don't think I'm dressing up.
I'll just say this. The best costume I ever did was Steve Urkel. It was the most beautiful thing. I wore the suspenders. I had the glasses. It was fantastic. We will get into that gaming news. And the first news story deals with one of our favorite websites, the good boys and girls over at Facebook. Now, we know that Facebook has been killing it with virtual reality in terms of the Oculus Quest 2 that was recently released. But there's a new caveat that comes with buying one. This is on GameInformer.com by Jason Giesau. I hope I pronounced that right. Facebook, like other social media platforms, can often feel like some intangible antagonistic force. And because of this, people may choose to go off the social media grid and deactivate their account temporarily. In more extreme cases, one might even decide to completely delete their Facebook account if they have no intention of returning. Mac, I'm sure you can see where this is going. Be warned, if you've purchased an Oculus Quest 2 and some VR titles to go along with it, you will lose all your games if you permanently delete your Facebook account. There's not much more that needs to be said than that. Now, Mac, as far as ranking how wrong this is, we often talk about how wrong it is that Apple or Amazon or whoever could just delete your digital stuff one day, or even iTunes, and just say it's gone. Do you think this is on that level, or is this worse? Deleting your Facebook, losing all the games you've paid for?
Well, honestly, it's no worse than any other platform that we're dealing with. So, for example, if you delete your Steam account, you lose all your games. I imagine if you delete your account for the Epic Store, you'll lose all of your purchases that you've put there and so on. I think the only thing that makes this less palatable is that there is extra baggage there from the Facebook side of things. And I think most right. people would probably acknowledge that, you know, if you deleted your account and you removed the storefront, that you would expect to say goodbye to those games. Now, I agree with you. It's messed up that that's a thing. But then again, I have a much more... Just in general, I'm the type of person who's just like, oh, you know what? You should be able, if you've got the barcode on the back of your textbook, you ought to be able to redeem that for a free digital copy of the textbook that you already own from
Agreed.
Macmillan. You know,
Agreed.
And I felt very passionately about this when I was going to school and the like. And you know what? We can get into that later. But I also feel like you ought to have some way to retain the ownership of, you know, the titles that you've purchased. But this is, I will say, you know, if we do set to the side that now the platform or the storefront or whatever is now Facebook, that it's like, if we couch it in that terms, then it's no different from what else we've had to worry about, you know?
So here's where I think it is slightly different, because it's a Quest store. It's the Oculus Quest store, mm-hmm. but Facebook owns the Oculus Quest, mm-hmm. right? So... It's not quite the same. You're required to tie your Oculus Quest to a Facebook account, but a lot of people just don't really use Facebook. And so it's not like you're going on Facebook and buying the games, but it's simply saying, hey, you got to have an ID with Facebook in order to use this. Now, on the one hand, I get where they're coming from, because they're using something that people want to force them into buying a second product. It's almost like tying them together. Also, in my opinion, it decreases the amount of anonymity on the platform, because they said before that you cannot just make a fake Facebook account or one that doesn't have your full name. It has to be legitimately you, or else you risk losing it. So it prevents people from making random accounts, going online and harassing people, you know what I mean, in the online gaming space. So I like that. But where Facebook has had so many issues with violations of privacy, and they are constantly in litigation and being, you know, questioned by... even the Supreme Court, I believe, or not the Supreme Court, but by Congress, I just don't think that it's right to force people to keep the Facebook account. To me, that's wrong.
No, I totally agree with you. I think it's wrong, and I'm not a fan of the practice in general. I'm also not a fan of the practice in this case, and I get what you're saying about this being different because it's an after the fact, now it's been tied in. After potentially your various purchases have already been made and the like.
Right.
And it definitely isn't great, and I don't like it. But I can see kind of where they're coming from on the, it's ours now, it's a part of our family of products, we need you to stay within the family. We're a family here.
Yeah.
One of us. And, you know, something like that.
Right. Well, Ishmobile asks in the chat, can your Facebook friends see what you are playing? And that is a question that I do not know the answer to. I would assume not, because occasionally there's other stuff that has to be tied to Facebook to use. And generally it says Facebook will not post from this app without your permission. So I would assume that Oculus Quest is the same way, but I do not know for certain. Well, let's keep things moving on to our next news story. Mac, this is just a straight up tweet, homie. This is just a straight up tweet. This next story from... the boys and girls at Cyberpunk, and if you've been following things on Twitter, you know what this is about. Here's the tweet from earlier today. Hey everyone, today we've decided to move the release date of Cyberpunk 2077 by 21 days. The new release date is December 10th. Most likely, there are many emotions and questions in your heads. So first and foremost, please accept our humble apologies. The biggest challenge for us right now is shipping the game on current gen, next gen, and PC at the same time, which requires us to prepare and test 9 versions of it. Xbox One and X, compatibility on the Series S and X, PS4 and Pro, compatibility on PS5, PC, Stadia, while working from home, they say. Since Cyberpunk 2077 evolved towards almost being a next-gen title somewhere along the way, we need to make sure everything works well and that every version runs smoothly. We're aware it might seem unrealistic when someone says that 21 days can make a difference in such a massive and complex game, but they really do. Now, here's where it really gets interesting, Mac, because this game had gone gold, and I'll just read what they say about that. Some of you might be wondering what these words mean in light of us saying we achieved Gold Master some time ago. Passing certification or going gold means that the game is ready, can be completed, and has all content in it. But it doesn't mean we stop working on it and raising the quality bar. I'll just stop reading there. Because then they just go on and say we believe this game's going to be amazing, etc., etc. Mac, I want to get your thoughts on this. And keep in mind, we talked about the concept of crunch before, right? And how we're against it. They had previously said that they would not resort to crunch to get this game done. Mm-hmm. They also had previously said that they would not delay the game again, and they have since done both of those things. Do we need to be more lenient as gamers, or are they just messing up?
Oh, man, I wish I knew. I lack basically any of the necessary information or experience to do anything more than just
don't.
Be a talking head here.
You have done 162 episodes of a gaming podcast before this one, and you played games for decades, so you have plenty of experience. Let's hear it.
Okay. So my experience is that one of my favorite games of all time took way longer than expected. It was originally supposed to be done, say, in 2016 or so. It didn't come out until 2018, kind of near the end of the year. I talked about it a couple times ago in video game history. But I am more of the opinion of take the time, get it done. If it doesn't look like it's going to be finished, keep on working on it. Although you cannot rush things past a certain extent. In some cases, no matter how many people you put on a thing, there is a tapping out point. And maybe that's where they're at, that they couldn't crunch it any harder to make it happen.
So I want to give both sides. That's great points that you made. We've all been somewhere in our life where we needed more time to get something done. Whether it was a college essay, whether it was a favor that you said you'd do someone, whether it was a project at work, we have all been there. And so in that sense, I want us to be kind and say, listen, we get it. You know, it's hard to get things done. You know, it's hard to get massive projects done. And things really can come up at the last minute that you weren't expecting. I don't make games, so it's really hard for me to sit up on my pedestal and say, come on, you said you weren't going to do this. But at the same time, I feel like this is bigger than just making a game. This is promises that you made to your employees by saying that, one, you wouldn't make them crunch, and that, two, you weren't going to delay the game again. If they were crunching and thinking that they were going to be done in November, they're still going to be crunching into December when it's done. And that also means that this is going to be something that will be in the works over the Thanksgiving holiday and leading up into the winter holidays, Hanukkah, Christmas, Kwanzaa, and all of that, which means that as these people go home, they are going to have this big project on their minds. And so I think it's just not fair to the employees to push it out. The fact that it went gold, Mac, is the one thing that really frustrates me, because typically, in fact, I can't think of another time where a game went gold and then was delayed afterward.
So I do want to read a very hopeful comment from Spenis on the subject, saying, I think this delay, since it's only 3 weeks long, is to continue to work out the kinks on the next-gen versions. The game is ready to go, but since it has been pushed back to this point of late current-gen and early next-gen, it's a bummer that I will not be able to play it in November, but it's not a point where still there is no major need to panic. I think that's a very hopeful look, and, you know, if Spenis, if you're right, if this new date is kept to, then, you know, that's not too long of a wait. Maybe it won't ruin, you know, the holiday season for all of these employees who are already crunched, and we can be hopeful, but, you know, hope for the best, expect the worst, I suppose.
This is a big enough game. It's made by the people who made Witcher 3 CD Projekt Red. People were taking time off of work just to be able to play this game. Now, I get that that's frustrating, but let's remember to be kind in our tweets, in our videos, in our podcasts, as we deal with the frustration of this being pushed back. Mm-hmm. Let's keep things moving on to our last news story of the week, just for the sake of time. Mech, this is one that's just kind of interesting frustrated me a little bit, and I want to get your thoughts on this. This is on IGN.com, and I'll read the title. PS5 4K Movie Essentials Series is up for pre-order. Here's what it says by Chris Reed. Sony is coming out with a new line of 4K UHD Blu-rays aimed at PlayStation 5 owners called the PS5 4K Movie Essentials line. It contains reissues of movies Sony thinks gamers are likely to enjoy. And judging by the pics, Sony is probably right. You'll find new editions of films like Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, Venom, Baby Driver, Hellboy, and more. We have Amazon links in the whole line below. Amazon has listed them with December 1 release dates, and the majority of them are going for $30.99. All of the movies come with a 4K UHD disc, plus a standard Blu-ray disc and a digital copy of the movie. I feel like this is kind of a softball discussion. These are selling for $30. They say on the package PS5 4K Movie Essentials, but it's essentially the exact same package that has been sold since these movies came out previously. For context, I looked up the price of Venom right now. Mm-hmm. It's like $18.99 or something like that.
For the 4K?
Yeah, for the 4K Blu-ray digital. So why, how is Sony, what are they doing? What are they doing? Releasing it again for 30?
Who are we to deny the diehard Venom fan out there who needs every single release of Venom? I mean, this PS5 release gives them an additional purchase to put on that shelf in the expansive Venom collection.
Okay, fine. If someone's a collector, yes. But for someone who maybe just wants to see the movie, I mean, they probably already have. But on the off chance that they haven't, why not just buy the one that's 33% cheaper? Yeah, we like to save money here at Two Nerds in a Pod. Please do not buy these PS5 essentials. Mac, that has been our news for the week.
All right. Well, now that we've taken a look around us right now, let's take a little look into the past with some video game history. I think we'll start with the... more recent and work backwards. In 2009, the release of League of Legends for the PC. So those of you who are familiar with League of Legends, it was developed, of course, by some team leads who were really into Dota. Dota, Defense of the Ancients, was a mod map. It was basically a mod for Warcraft 3. Supported, at least at that time, entirely by the efforts of the, you know, of the third party of the modding community. And obviously, Dota grew to something more than that, with official Blizzard support and releases later on in Dota 2 and the like. Arguably, and I think this is a subject we will visit in future video game histories when we talk maybe a little bit about, you know, MOBAs, massive online battle arenas, and how they got started, when, where, the nascent ideas, and when these things kind of moved along on their tracks. But League of Legends is certain, but League of Legends is certainly where I feel like a lot of people really got into MOBAs with League of Legends. popularization of the genre, if
for
you will.
For sure, yeah.
But anyway, League of Legends, now obviously I'm coming at it from more of an academic perspective because I've never really played League of Legends. Mr. Nice Guy, is League of Legends your thing?
Yeah, dude, it's freaking phenomenal. And I don't necessarily play the MOBA as much, but they came out with a version that has all the heroes called Teamfight Tactics, which is an auto-battler, mm-hmm. which comes from it's still run in the League of Legends client. And that is an amazing game. I've streamed it a lot. My brother loves it. We also play League of Legends as well. Also, we talked a couple weeks ago about how League of Legends is going to be coming to mobile. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's still killing it after all these years for a free game.
Many happy returns to them, as I'm sure they're pretty pleased with the project that that they put together. So we'll move back a little bit farther. It would have been in 2000 where we had the release of the PS2.
Yes, yes.
Mr. Nice Guy, I hate to lean on you too heavily, but the PS2 was not a console that I really had when it came out, or even close to when it came out, because I had purchased the PS1 with my own hard-earned money, but it wasn't...
It's a good feeling.
Yeah, it was, but it wasn't until many years later, and I mean, as a result of buying these things with my hard-earned money, I had to skip whole generations of consoles, and the PS2 was one that got left out for me. So, Mr. Nice Guy, if you'd be so kind, do you have any special memories or favorite games from the PlayStation 2?
Yeah, and I'd love to hear from everyone else in the chat, too, what their favorite PS2 games are. So I had the PS2 Slim when that came out, and that was absolutely amazing. I remember I was in college, and because I got it a few years after it came out, and some of my favorite games, like when I'd come home from college, would be Ratchet & Clank, Ratchet Deadlock, Ratchet Up Your Arsenal. Here's the best one, Mac. Mm-hmm. The best game on PS2.
Best game.
Hands down, GTA San Andreas.
Hot take.
I have never loved a GTA game as much as I loved that game. And it was just a great game. Playing as CJ, going up against the Grove Street gangs. You know, it was the first game where you could eat and actually watch your character get fat. You could go to the gym and lift weights. Looking back on it, it has aged absolutely terribly. But the PS2 library was just so killer. There were so many good games. Loved it.
Yeah, the PS2 did have a very big library. I couldn't tell you off the top of my head how many games were in that library, but I believe that the PS2, and I reserve the right to walk this back later, but I seem to recall that the PS2 still has the largest library of any of the video game libraries, if we aren't counting things like mobile console thing, then it's got the most. But it seems like for the most part, there's a lot of our viewership of our friends and fellow nerds here that skipped the PS2 as well. I'm not seeing many specific favorites in here, but Ishmobile does remember GTA San Andreas. Spenis did love the PS2, as it was one of, if not the greatest console in gaming history. Whew, that's big claim there.
Well, it's the number one selling for sure.
It certainly has a heck of a lot of sales and a big library of games. Uncle Ruckus does say all of the Ratchet and Clanks were pretty good.
Ooh, he mentioned NBA Street. I had forgot about that. Absolutely.
Here we are. We're getting a Jack and Dexter series. Tekken 4 and 5 are in here. So that's pretty good. But
Sly Cooper? Nice.
Yeah, Sly Cooper. So some good ones there. And, you know, still to this day, the PS2, it's a console that I actually have. I have a modded one with a hard drive plugged in so that I can, you know, play on that PS2, but I just haven't really dove into the games yet. And that's my misfortune, for sure. So
it was my first experience with online gaming as well, I'll say that, because you could buy this adapter, and so I would play NBA Live online with people, and it was so laggy and so bad, but it was just so much fun.
Nice, nice. We are going to go just a little bit farther back. The launch of 3D Studio, which I did not make note in my notes which year that was, so we'll just have to pretend, you know, maybe I'll add it in post, but it was probably back in the 80s or so, which was the first 3D animation software suite. A lot of the tools that are, you know, still used for 3D modeling, and, you know, almost all of our video games now take advantage of 3D modeling. And not to say that it wouldn't have happened without 3D Studio, but 3D Studio was the first one, and we still see its impacts today, even in the current generation of three-dimensional animation softwares. A big week in video game history for sure.
Well, thank you for that history, and now it is time for a segment called The Topic of the Week, where we talk about something relevant in gaming and give our opinion on it. Well, today I'm going to throw you all a curveball. I'm actually going to kick things over to Max, and he's live in the field. I can see it's rainy. I can see it's windy, Mac, but I think that you have a news story. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, you're coming through all right, although it is a touch choppy out here in the field.
Oh, man. Well, Mac, stay safe out there. Stay warm. But what story did you want to share with us this week?
We've got a big one, Mr. Nice Guy. It's a quote from a Mr. Alex Hutchinson, one of the creative directors at Stadia. Recently, there was a bit of a issue where Twitch sent out a bunch of stupid, and I don't use that term lightly, notices to, you know, to Twitch users, and they didn't say what has been the issue. They didn't say where music was the issue. There was just like, hey, there are, you know, there's takedown requests on your streams that have music, you know, take care of that. Bye. Which is very unhelpful. Anyway, on the heels of this sort of thing happening, Alex Hutchinson, one of the creative directors at Stadia, as I mentioned, said in a series of a couple of tweets that have been very panned by basically everybody, I'll just quote them for you in their entirety. Quote, streamers worried about getting their content pulled because they used music they didn't pay for should be more worried by the fact that they're streaming games they didn't pay for as well. It's all gone as soon as publishers decide to enforce it. The real truth is the streamers should be paying the developers and publishers of the games they stream. They should be buying a license like any real business and paying for the content they use. Emphasis is added by moi. But, Mr. Nice Guy, I don't think I need to give any more than just reading those words. How does that strike you?
It strikes me in a bad way, but I want to get opinions from the chat too. So if you have opinions on this chat, please let us know. We'll read a few of them. I get where he is coming from a business perspective, because you cannot, as a movie theater, just show a movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
Without having a license to show that movie. Now, granted, movie theaters are charging people to come in. Streamers are actually providing the content for free. And if you enjoy it, you have the option to donate, to subscribe, to cheer, to do those types of things. Now, that said, the precedent has already been set here. YouTubers post stuff without issue all the time. Why should live streaming it be any different? I don't know how someone who works in the games industry could have this opinion, Mac, that you need to buy a license. And he really makes a misleading statement in saying that gamers have not paid for it, because they absolutely have paid for the game, right? Mm-hmm. They have not paid for a license, but they have paid for the game. So I just strongly disagree with what he had to say.
Mm-hmm. And I would like to point out that let's not forget what we're talking about is a creative lead on Stadia, right? Stadia is Google's foray into gaming, emphasized, focused on you never having the game data, but only streaming the game data. It's obviously and very clearly a, you know, somebody, and I mean, he's not the head of Stadia, he's a creative director, so I don't know what kind of control that actually gives him, but it sounds like it might be fair to say that this is a look into the philosophy behind the people who are in charge of Stadia, that not only do they feel like us as video gamers, us as game players, that we are, they think maybe that we're entitled, they think maybe that we are asking too much when we pay money for a game. I think this is kind of canary in the coal mine, as it were, as to what the people at Stadia might think of us as a whole, and, you know, and how we measure up in their eyes, I think.
Now, Jason Schreier, very, very notable games journalist, very, very respected, he tweeted something out in relation to this, and I will paraphrase here. He effectively said that Alex Hutchinson, the guy who tweeted this out, his profile says he's a creative director at Stadia, when in actuality, he is a creative director at a studio that makes games for Stadia.
Oh.
So that's a slightly different thing. And if you go look at Hutchinson's profile now, since this whole thing happened, he changed his Twitter profile to say creative director at such and such studio in Montreal.
Oh.
That makes games for Stadia. Now, granted, it doesn't matter.
No,
right?
This actually matters quite a bit, Mr. Nice Guy. I mean, you know me. I am the first to run to... I'm biased against Stadia and its things. And anyway, so, I mean, this is... I appreciate you finding that because that changed since I wrote this up. So, I mean, yeah no, thanks for pointing that out. I did not do a deeper analysis. I was like... When I saw Creative Director, I was like, whoa! So... My bad.
No, you're good, man. What it doesn't change is that his opinion is wrong. and I guess I hate to say that his opinion's wrong because he can have that opinion if he wants to. But it's just not a good look, man.
Yeah.
If you make video games and you and he worked on Assassin's Creed before, I think he worked on Gears of War in some capacity. You know, if you have worked on many notable games and this is your opinion, is that just you or is that echoing that something that you're hearing behind closed doors, like you said, you know, is that a route that one day we will have to go? You know, someday we'll have $70 games and someday we'll have to pay for licenses in order to stream those games. I hope not, but I just don't see how this is a good idea. Mac, one major point that he forgets is that streamers, no matter what size, often help these games to be successful. Mm. If we look at 2020 and we look at games like Escape from Tarkov, which came out several years ago, we look at games like Among Us, which came out a few years ago. We look at games like Fall Guys. We look at games like Fortnite in past years, even PUBG. Those games sometimes started off really, really slow. But when one or two big streamers started streaming them, it was an absolute snowball of growth for these games. Among Us is huge right now, in part because streamers gave it exposure to the rest of the world. So... I feel like it's a, what's the word, like a symbiotic, what's the relationship where they're both relying on each other? What's the term?
Yeah, no, that's it. Symbiotic. At least that's the one I would have gone for myself too.
Yeah, so that's my opinion.
Let me just throw out there that he isn't wrong, strictly speaking. You know me, I am lame. I am so lame. How lame are you, Mac? I am so lame that I read the EULAs. When Ooh. I grab a game. Yes, that face.
That's lame.
And almost always, the EULAs, there are some notable exceptions. For example, League of Legends, which we were talking about in gaming history, theirs is different. Theirs expressly amends their EULA to encourage streaming. But most EULAs do actually say that public performances are reserved to the publisher or the platform, and that is a expressly reserved to the game maker. You know, you don't have the right as a streamer, even if you've purchased the game legitimately, you don't have the right to do a public performance of most modern video games. But most of the game companies don't seem to care and don't pursue you for infringement. So he's not wrong to say that, you know, that we don't have the right to do the streaming. I take issue with the fact that we don't have the right to do the streaming, and depending upon who the game maker is, you might actually have those, because like you said, it's obvious that they benefit. It's obvious that it's good for everybody. Should it be this way? Should it be the way where it's like, you know, they've reserved the rights for themselves and we just have to hope that they don't come down on us? It's like... Yeah, exactly, Master of Lie. Like when Persona 5 blocked out cutscenes, right? Now, should it be this way? No, it shouldn't be this way. But it is that way. And they, and I mean most game developers, have very little reason to change it specifically because of things like Persona 5. If they let go of expressly reserving the rights to themselves for the public performances, then they can't issue DMCAs blocking out cutscenes, and they also don't have that to use when someone puts up, you know, unkind reviews, because that is something that we have seen in the past, is a game company, you know, DMCA takedown request on unflattering reviews, and it's not a tool that they would want to give up. We're not going to see this, but I mean, it's just bad all around, when really it ought to be a symbiotic relationship. It ought to be treated like the symbiotic relationship that, as Mr. Nice Guy pointed out, that it truly is.
Agreed.
So, I mean, I don't know what else we want to say on the subject, but...
Mac, even your boys and girls at Nintendo are not acting like this.
Well, I mean, let's not forget the Nintendo content creator program or the Nintendo streamer program. Oh, you want to stream Nintendo games? Well, give all your money here and Uncle Nintendo will pay you out what he thinks you're worth. And
it never worked out, though. It never ended up being
that. It's true, it never worked out, but not for lack of trying. So, I mean, when you say not even Nintendo, I say, please, if they could get away with it.
If they can't get it done, no one else is going to be able to.
I don't necessarily disagree with you, but then again, I feel like I've just seen year after year, gamers get more and more okay with letting things slide, and game publishers and game devs just pulling more and more to themselves. So I don't know. It's not happened yet, but I can absolutely see it happen in the future.
Well, cool. That has been our topic of the week.
Yeah. Oh, I've done so much talking, and I'm going to do just one little bit more, because now it's time for a little kick or kickstart. You know what this is about, folks. We present a crowdfunding project. We ask, we post a link in the chat. We give a quick intro and we ask you to say whether or not you think it should be kicked out of here or whether it should be kickstarted. Here comes the link. This is Retro Game Builder. It is a visual method of creating Super Nintendo games without having to know how to program in 65816 assembly language as the Super Nintendo required, and puts it more in line of the ways that you could that you can build games in, you know, in game makers now with a you know, graphical user interface and the like. The guy behind this is someone who's been, who's done projects with, Ben Hex Group, which is Element 14, if I recall properly. They are looking for, $68,000 to bring this to market. Minimum buy-in if you just want the software is $50 for a digital copy of the software, and $99 if you want a copy of the software. If you want a cartridge programmer, you know, an interface between your computer and the cartridge, and a rewritable flash cartridge so that you can, you know, put your video game creation onto an SNES cartridge and play it in your hardware. Otherwise, of course, you can just either take advantage of a different flash cart, or you can, you know, play it via emulator on your PC. So, delivery in about a year, in October of 2021 is what it looks like. So, Mr. Nice Guy, any initial thoughts?
I like that people are doing this because I think that it's cool for us to be able to play new games on SNES, on NES, and all those retro consoles. Didn't someone do something similar to this on NES a while back?
Yes, indeed. I backed that one on Kickstarter. I have the software, and sadly, as of yet, I have not really dug into it. Here's to hoping that that, you know, quarantine round two does not get me sufficiently stir crazy as to learn.
Yeah, so I think that this is cool. I don't think it's worth $99, to be honest. I honestly feel like this kind of stuff should be open source with donations available. I like the idea of just making this available to the community and then saying, hey, if you really liked it, drop me a few bucks. And I feel like a lot of people have done that and they've been successful. I don't think that this is something that I would back. And honestly, I don't think it's going to get backed. I feel like it's a little too niche. If this was something that said, hey, you can do SNES, Sega, you know, Game Gear, Game Boy, NES all in one, I think people might be more interested. But because it's just one, I don't know if there's enough enthusiasts who are trying to make SNES games that do not already know how, if that made sense. I feel like people who really are like hardcore SNES programmers know how to program.
I think I would enjoy it, but $50 for the software alone, I feel like that's about double what the cost should be for, you know, for this software. Now, that being said, there's no demo. There's not really too frightfully much in the way of visuals either. There's a little bit of an explanation. And while I appreciate that, from what I can see, $50 doesn't seem to be the right price point for me, at least.
Yeah, so we got some comments in the chat I want to acknowledge. Welcome, Crux Capacitor. he or she says SNES used assembly, which is one of the reasons not a lot of homebrew has been made for it, despite its popularity. And he says he disagrees with what I said, I think. Most programmers can't program in assembly. Now, assembly is a really old programming language. Like, I remember playing this game on my TI-83 called Penguins, and it was written in assembly. So it's not like it's something that is so new that people don't know how to do. I'm sure that there's information out there on how to learn how to do it, and I just can't believe that someone has been sitting around thinking, man, I wish there was a way I could make games for my SNES, you know, for the past 20 or 30 years, and just hasn't figured out a way to do it. You know what I mean? If it was that important to them.
Sure, but I think there's something to be said about increasing accessibility. You know, while you might have difficulty finding the time to learn the assembly language for the Super Nintendo, if there was a, you know, user interface, a graphical user interface that you could work with, I feel overwhelmingly positive about that in general. I want more people to be able to design for whatever system they want, because increasingly it's the only reason why we are retaining certain aspects of video game history is the, you know, enthusiast and the homebrew communities of things. And so I feel like more people being able to program, even if it's through a, you know, a GUI for Super Nintendo, I think is only going to be a, you know, is only going to be a good thing. I just wish it wasn't so darned expensive. I mean, if it wasn't $50, I would say kickstart right now. If it was $25, I would absolutely say kickstart. But $50 and $100 is just a bit too rich for my blood.
Yeah, when you started reading about it, I immediately thought $20. You know, that's what I thought would be a fair price point. Well, Mac, is it time for us to vote?
Kick. I wish I could say kickstart. What do you think, Mr. Yeah, Nice Guy?
I say the same thing. I think it's too niche, and I also don't like the price. So, to me, once again, I feel like people who want to program on this will find a way without having to buy this. So, that's it for me. Also, no playable demo, dude.
Yeah, well, I mean, hard to give a playable demo of a tool, of a program
demo
that's not finished yet. And of course, we do have some kicks, and we also have some people who would definitely go for kickstart, if they did kickstart things. So, we wish Andy, we wish Andy West all the best. We hope that, that Retro Game Builder makes it across the line. And for those of you inclined, well, now you know, and knowing is half the battle. But that has been Kick or Kickstart. And I know I've droned on for ages here, but I do have to throw one more out there, because episode 163 would not be complete without a sound test. You all send your nerdy questions to us each week, and each week we do what we can. But this is our chance to challenge you. If you happen to be the first one to successfully tweet at @2nerdsinapod with the hashtag soundtest and identify this one, episode 163, as the one that you're guessing, and correctly identify it, you might have a handy-dandy special perler sent to you from me, made by my very own two hands. So, this sound is from somewhere, somewhen, somehow in video games. Good luck. And listen up.
You think you're special with your leather jackets and your fancy blood?
All right, well, good luck. You'll need it.
Awesome. And now it is time for Nerdflex. A segment where you, the viewers, try to stump the host, and you do it every once in a while, but very rarely. This week we have some questions in our test bank, but if you are here live, please get your nerdy video game trivia question into the chat, preferably multiple choice. Now, Mac, here's what I was thinking, man. We want this to be about us getting the questions right. So I feel like if someone gives us a multiple choice question, we should have to go with the same answer.
Oh, you don't want us to be able to split the difference?
Nah, because then it's too easy. Because then if there's four options, we have a 50% chance of getting it right, even if we didn't really know. Even if we were just guessing, right? So I feel like we should have to pick the same answer. What do you think?
I don't know if I'm willing to commit to that, Mr. Nice Guy.
in the sake of us showing our gaming knowledge off. Anyway, if you're here live, get these questions into the chat. In the meantime, let's go with one question from our test bank. Now, Mac, this is one that's a Nintendo question. I'm sure Alex Mann will know the answer, but do not tell us the answer in the chat. Mario question. Which was the first Mario Kart game to feature bikes?
The first Mario Kart game to feature bikes?
Yeah, which one was the first Mario Kart game to feature bikes? And I think I know this, but I'm not 100% sure.
I don't recall any bikes in the first Mario Kart. And the second,
there absolutely were not.
Yeah, the second Mario Kart was Mario Kart 64, and I don't remember any bikes being there.
Right.
The third Mario Kart game was the third one Double Dash?
I think it was, but I believe there may have been one on, because let's see, Double Dash was GameCube, and then there was like a Mario Kart DS,
mm-hmm.
but my first instinct was Double Dash was the first one to have bikes. I'm trying to remember if there were bikes in it or not.
Because the big gimmick of Double Dash was, you know, was two, would they have had bikes? I mean, I know they've got some bikes in the current stuff, like Mario Kart 8 or whatever that's going on right now. And in it, there are some that are on bikes, but I don't know. I'll go with you on Double Dash, though. I feel like that's a good solid answer.
Let's see. It's either that or it's one of the handhelds, but I'm pretty sure it's Double Dash. Yeah, and we were wrong.
Yeah.
By the way, the first one was Mario Kart Wii.
Mario Kart Wii. Well, we can't win them all, can we, Mr. Nice Guy?
That's okay. Oh, and Spenis, of course, in the chat now says it's Mario Kart Wii, the sixth installment in the series. Good job, Spenis. Let's move on to our next question.
We've got multiple choice questions from Spenis and from Ishmobile.
Which one do you want to do first?
Let's do Spenis. The question is, keeping with the theme, it's Pokemon. Spenis is our resident Pokemaster. In Pokemon Red and Blue, there's a sleeping Pokemon that you have to wake up in order to reach Fuchsia City named Snorlax. How many of these roadblocks are there in the region? One, two, or three? So let's see. You have to use the Pokeflute in order to do it. I am 99% certain that there's more than one, because I feel like after we got done with the first one and woke up that first Snorlax, I feel like I still had other sleeping Snorlaxi that I could capture later on with the higher level Pokeballs. Mr. Nice Guy, you feel confident that it's three, right?
Yeah, from memory, uh-huh. and just that generally speaking, there's a rule of threes. In comedy, uh-huh. you have three punchlines. In video games, you think about The Legend of Zelda, a lot of times you have to go collect the three things, like the three gems, right? Or the three necklaces. I just feel like it was three.
Okay. I am willing to go with you on this one. We will say three. Spenis, that's our final answer. Three sleeping Snorlaxes.
Snorlax Eye, or whatever it is.
There are only two of them. One at the intersection east of Vermilion City and south of Lavender Town, and the other is west of Celadon City.
Okay, so I see a lot of people putting questions in the chat.
Indeed.
And I feel bad.
Yeah.
Because we're only going to be able to get through one more. Because we do three a week.
I'll tell you what, though. Let's hop down, and why don't we take... I think this is the first time that Crux Capacitor has brought a question. So let's go for Crux Capacitor's question.
What was Sega's original mascot? A, Sonic. B, Alex Kidd. C, Opa Opa. Or D, Captain Commando?
So, that's a great question. So if we're talking Sega, remember before the Sega Genesis, Sega had the Master System. And back in those days, I don't remember Opa Opa or Captain Commando. Captain Commando sounds like it could be, but I know that I've seen multiple Alex Kidd games.
It is. Yeah, it is.
Yeah, so that's what I was going to say. I was going to say B, Alex Kidd, because I feel like he had, you know, a bigger presence on the games, especially on the console back in the Master System days.
And I feel like it was their attempt to compete with Mario as well.
Certainly could have been. Let's hope that we can get Crux Capacitor's question right and not have a clean sweep. in the losses category.
Yeah, shout out to Ish Mobile and Alex Mann for having questions as well. We can only do so many each week.
Yes, but tell you what, go ahead and save those questions. Get them into us next week. Hold on to them for now.
So we're waiting for Crux. And there it is, Mac. You want to read
that? Tricky question here. Three of them, of the four, were Sega mascots, but Opa Opa is from Fantasy Zone and was their mascot in the arcade era and thus their first. Nice, solid,
dang,
deep dig, and I feel like I feel pretty good about it because we didn't, you know, sure we got it wrong, but we didn't. And Captain Commando was Capcom's mascot. But fantastic question, Crux Capacitor.
Yeah, I learned something today.
Great trivia. Thanks everybody for participating. So now we turn to a little bit of legalese.
Legalese.
And in the interest of time, I am going to be rather quick today, and I'm going to say that there has been a development in the Billy Mitchell v. Twin Galaxies. I can't go into too frightfully much detail, but I will say that it appears, from what I can tell, a minute order filed the other day, that the anti-SLAPP motion, which SLAPP stands for Strategic Lawsuit Against Public Participation, that the anti-SLAPP suit that Twin Galaxies responded with has been approved by the judge. That in the judge's estimation, that this suit, or at least that they're saying, hey, Billy Mitchell, you know, this, you are just trying to bring in this lawsuit to try and silence criticism, and you can't do that, that it has, you know, that on the merits it is likely to succeed. I believe if I saw the filing correctly, I believe they've actually assessed Billy Mitchell money to be paid on account of this suit being a SLAPP suit. But, you know, we'll see where it goes. This is being heard in California, and California has some of the most stringent anti-SLAPP law framework in place. The other thing happens to be, and I can't get into the weeds because we just don't have the time, but it's about Section 230 and the FCC. Earlier this month, Ajit Pai, head of the FCC, said he would clarify the meaning of Section 230, and since he said those words, some portion of the muscles in my body have been tensed with pure dread and terror, because I have not seen basically a single thing that Ajit Pai has done that I thought was actually either necessarily the right legal call, and definitely wasn't the right, you know, call from a technological standpoint. But the short version is that Section 230 is the part of the DMCA, Digital Millennium Copyright Act, that was designed to address the issue that if a platform was held responsible for the content its users uploaded, the internet could not exist in the way it does today. Just imagine a network. Just imagine what the internet would be if no one would host files. If no one hosts video, we can't have Twitch. We can't have YouTube. If no one hosts files, we can't have Google Docs. We can't have Scribd. We can't have whatever. If the platform is held responsible for the content its users upload, even in the form of just typing out messages, news on the internet really goes away. If there's no ability for files to be hosted online, then the internet doesn't really work. Then the internet that we have is merely a glorified peer-to-peer network. Google Stadia would still work, nothing else. That's the type of thing that we're talking about. Anyway, the short version of this is that in the past I've been super critical of the FCC and its stance against neutrality, net neutrality. Mac, what does that have to do with anything? Well, in order to say that the FCC has the ability to define Section 230 of the FCC, they had to Section 230, they basically had to walk back everything they said about net neutrality. They had to say when they got rid of it that you know, ISPs were not common carriers, were not governed by Title II of, by Title II of the Section 102 of the 102B of the Communications Act, which is Title II common carriers. They had to say ISPs aren't Title II, so we can't, you know, we can't have net neutrality because the FCC doesn't have power there. But in order to do this redefining, they have literally said that Section 230 is within the scope of Section 201B. So ISPs aren't telecommunications services, but everything else, individual, you know, websites, are all telecommunication carriers. And that's how the FCC has the authority to define Section 230 or redefine Section 230. So, short version, your ISP is not a telecommunication provider. Twitch somehow inexplicably is a telecommunication provider. And that is Ajit Pai of the FCC, everybody. And that has been just a little bit of legalese.
Mac is exhausted. Some of y'all are too. And for, that was exciting, though. I thought that was very interesting, in all seriousness.
You are far too kind. It's depressing. But that's our show. Although we do have to talk about what we're watching and what we've been playing.
Yeah, let's jump right in. So, dude, as far as what I've been playing, just straight up Half-Life Alyx. Oh my goodness, what a game, what a game, what a freaking game. That's pretty much all that I've been playing this week. And as far as what I have been watching, rewatching The Mandalorian in preparation for Season 2, which comes out this weekend. And, Mac, just for the sake of time, those are my main two this week. How about you? Oh, by the way, if you're here live, let us know in the chat what you've been watching or playing, because we're always looking for cool, nerdy stuff to get into. Mac, how about you, buddy?
Well, Mrs. The Mac and I, we finished off Lucifer Season 5. A little bit of a cliffhanger there at the end. We've been re-watching for the third time Cobra Kai. Also, we're always watching a little bit of The Simpsons rather Star Trek. As for
very, very similar shows.
Yeah, very similar. It was, as for what I've been playing, I haven't really been playing any video games. Most of what I've been playing have been tabletop RPGs, a little bit of GURPS here and there, a little bit of Dungeons & Dragons 5e as well on the weekends. But that's been me. I'll go ahead and hit watching if you want to get playing.
Let's do it.
All right, Uncle Ruckus is watching The Simpsons. Galvatron's watching Borat, the new film. And let's see, Crux Capacitor is watching Dark. Ishmobile's watching Avengers, Age of Ultron, and The Good Place. Yeah. And yeah, that's what I have for watching tonight.
Nice. Now, as far as what people are playing, Uncle Ruckus is playing Payday 2 and Madden 21. Galvatron, is he playing anything? We'll get to it. Crux Capacitor is playing Hades and Volgar. Ishmobile is playing GURPS and Cranium. Nice. Alyx Man is playing Four Swords Adventures. Spenis is playing Ghost of Tsushima, Fall Guys, Super Mario 3D All-Stars. He just completed his first ever 120-star playthrough of Mario 64. That's an achievement, and I feel like that's something that many gamers need to do, myself included. Galvatron is playing Forza Motorsport 7, Last of Us Remastered, and Transformers Devastation. Mac, why don't you take us home, my man? Or I'll take us home. How about that?
Yeah, go ahead. Take us home, sir.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, thanks for tuning in to episode 163 of Two Nerds in a Pod, the nerdiest video game podcast in the galaxy. Y'all know what to do. Hit us up on social media. Show your love. Leave a review. All that good stuff. I can't talk. Have a good night. We'll see y'all next week. Deuces.
See ya.